Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
For over 130 years, McCormick has helped you make mom's lasagna to keep her secret recipe alive. Take over taco night. No matter how chaotic your day is, conquer the bake sale, even if you get to it last minute. And craft the perfect Sunday brunch when it's not even Sunday. Because with McCormick by your side, it's gonna be great.
Hey, I'm Dr. Michael Hunter, forensic pathologist from Autopsy, Reels Channel's medical mystery series on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts. Be sure to download the Podcast One app and subscribe. Then go to Reels.com, that's R-E-E-L-Z.com, to find more programs like this one on Reels Channel.
Now to the death of legendary soul singer Barry White. White died Friday at the age of 58 at a Los Angeles hospital.
Singer-songwriter Barry White was the gentle giant of the music industry. He rose from the tough streets of Los Angeles to become a 100 million album-selling superstar.
He was able to take all that machismo and somehow convert it into this lush, romantic, dreamy music.
Labeled the guru of love, or simply the maestro, his blend of funk and soul became the ultimate seduction theme of the 70s.
Barry would take you wherever you wanted to go, mentally, physically, emotionally.
He was a doting father to his 8 children.
Yeah, he was awesome.
Barry was a teddy bear. He was real sweet.
But during his life, Barry was plagued with ill health.
He walked with a cane. When nobody was around, he walked with a walker.
And on July 4th, 2003, Barry White died from a cardiac arrest at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles.
I don't think he was ever meant to live a long life. He never thought about old age.
Now, internationally esteemed forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter is looking into the case to get to the bottom of what led to the singer's untimely death.
Barry White was famed for his size almost as much as for his voice. And being obese is undoubtedly a risk factor when it comes to cardiac arrest. But I'm struck by what appears to be a pattern of ill health for Barry throughout much of his life. So I believe there's a lot more to this story. If I'm to get a true picture of what caused his fatal cardiac arrest, I need to know precisely what was going on in Barry's body in the years and months leading up to his death.
As the chief medical examiner in one of America's biggest cities, expert forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter has conducted thousands of autopsies. He works alongside law enforcement and other forensic specialists to investigate suspicious and complicated deaths.
Without doubt, Barry's size would have played a role in his death, but I'm not convinced that's the full story. Through access to medical information as well as firsthand accounts, I'm going to find what was going on in Barry White's life and body in the time leading up to his death.
November 23rd, 2000. Backstage, Sydney Entertainment Center, Australia. Almost 3 years before the star's death. Following a career slump in the 80s, Barry has been enjoying a renewed chart success due to a revival of 70s music.
Mark Elliott, biographer.
Barry, toward the end, had a little renaissance. People rediscovered him and heard that voice.
The singer is nearing the end of the third leg of his World Staying Power Tour, the very last tour before his death.
But due to ill health, some dates have been canceled.
I can see that Barry had planned a run of concerts across 4 continents, North America, Europe, Asia, and Australia. But no less than 7 concerts in the U.S. and 12 in the U.K. and Ireland were canceled and rescheduled due to what was deemed ill health. Was this simply physical exhaustion, or was something more sinister going on?
Barry White was born Barry Eugene Carter in Galveston, Texas, on September 12, 1944, to piano teacher Sadie Marie Carter, a single mother. His father, Melvin White, was already married with a family across town. Barry grew up with his younger brother, Darryl, in a tough neighborhood in South Los Angeles.
My grandmama, Nana, she made do with what she had. She made it work.
By the time he was 8 years of age, after turning down lessons from his mother, Barry had taught himself the piano by listening to her classical records. By the age of 10, Barry and his brother were sucked into the local gang culture.
I did everything. Fought, fighting, stealing cars, burglarizing houses, gang fights, all of it.
Darryl White, son.
You're confused as a child. You don't know what you got to do. You know you have to be a part of a gang to survive.
When Barry wasn't hanging out with gangs, he sang in the local church choir and even became its musical director, although he couldn't read music.
He finds peace, inspiration, and a way of expressing himself through the music of the church.
And at the age of 14, the famous Barry White vocal tone was born.
I woke up one morning, you know, like any other morning, and I spoke to my mother, and it horrified both of us. It was unbelievable. My chest vibrated. We just stood in the floor staring at each other.
But the lure of gang life proved strong. Almost 2 years later, Barry was serving 6 months in the county jail for stealing thousands of dollars worth of car tires. But this low point also became a turning point in his life.
I mean, he told me he looked in the mirror and he said, "Barry, what the hell are you doing in here?"
It was in jail that I made up my mind I was going to change my life. I was getting out of the gang I was in, and I was going to do something with my life.
At the age of 18, Barry would often walk the 12 miles from home to Hollywood, hawking himself around the music studios. And for the next 6 years, he worked between low-paid jobs as a session musician and arranger before getting his first contract as an A&R man. In the early 70s, he got his big break as a writer and producer, creating the female group Love Unlimited, along with the Love Unlimited Orchestra. And in 1972, he was persuaded to go behind the mic himself, after failing to find a male vocalist.
Somebody said to my father one day, they said, "Barry, you know why you can't find a singer for your music?" He said, "Why?" They said, "Because you need to be singing it."
His first release, "I'm Gonna Love You Just a Little Bit More, Baby," for 20th Century Records, was the fastest-selling single in the music label's history.
He put his vocals to one of those tracks. Woo, Lord Jesus. He didn't look back.
According to records, Barry White was almost 6'4" and weighed 364 pounds when he died. This gives him a body mass index of 44.7, and anything over 30 is labeled obese. So Barry's BMI figure classified him as morbidly obese. In less common cases, obesity can be due to genetics or even mental illness. But in most cases, it's due to a large appetite, an unhealthy diet, and a lack of exercise. If I'm going to understand the impact Barry's weight had on his life, I need to understand the root cause of it. And from my research, I have discovered that the singer's early life had a significant effect on his eating habits.
When Barry was growing up, his mother Sadie struggled to put food on the table.
Well, Barry grew up in a poor neighborhood, no father. The mother worked. They had no money, but they had a lot of love.
And with food often scarce, the singer's physique was nothing like it was during his music career.
Sandra White, half-sister.
Barry wasn't big all of his life. He was not. He was slim, you know, nicely built.
By the age of 20, Barry was still living in South L.A. and was married to his childhood sweetheart with three children of his own. And, like his mother years earlier, he was desperate to put food on the table.
Feeding his family was more important than feeding himself.
Between session gigs and menial jobs, Barry was on welfare, and any money he had, he spent on his wife and children. But to satisfy his own appetite, he had no choice but to steal.
He would go to a supermarket, and then he would get these two chickens, barbecued chickens, and he would eat them. And then when he was finished, he would leave the cart. That was just an excuse for him to go out and have two chickens, to make sure that he didn't eat the food that he wanted for his children and his wife.
But when Barry found success, his struggle for food was over. In 1974, at the age of 29, the singer was in London for his first European performances.
Ned Schenkman, manager.
When Barry started performing, he also was introduced to five-star hotels and what you can order from room service.
That's what I'm talking about. Gotta keep body and soul together.
And it was not unusual for Barry's dinner bill to be $1,500, $2,000.
Thank you. Lobster, crab, oysters, clams, mussels. He loved his fried chicken.
I would see Barry's room in the morning. It looked like the football team had partied that night before.
Dr. Linda Papadopoulos, psychologist.
The idea that he could, at this point in his life, have all the food he wanted. For somebody that literally went hungry, for somebody that had to think twice before, you know, eating, something that so many people take for granted, this would have been huge for him.
Barry White's love of food was not only guided by his upbringing. The chemicals in his brain would have also played a role. Chemical neurotransmitters called dopamine pass messages to the brain's receptors to control mood and feelings of pain and pleasure. They are the same transmitters which control the cravings drug users have. And studies show that people with obesity have fewer dopamine receptors in their body, which makes them predisposed to overeat fatty, sugary, and salty foods to increase the feeling of satisfaction. Developing a psychological and physical addiction to food at a young age would have made it difficult for Barry to change his eating habits. As a consequence, I can see that he suffered from a number of problems throughout his life.
And Dr. Hunter has found evidence of a condition which, in extreme cases, can kill. On July 4th, 2003, R&B music legend Barry White died from cardiac arrest at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, Los Angeles, at the age of 58. Now, well-renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter is looking into the factors that led up to his death.
So far, I've discovered that Barry was a compulsive eater, which appears to have developed out of the poverty he experienced as a child. But looking into the last few dates of his last tour, I can see ill health was having an impact on his performance.
November 23rd, 2000, backstage, Sydney Entertainment Center, Australia. The Barry White World Staying Power Tour, almost 3 years before the star's death. Barry is an hour late on stage. It's clear to those around him that he isn't up to the job.
He had to perform sitting down. It infuriated the crowds. They wanted Barry playing the piano and moving around.
The show was in the round, and he wouldn't turn, so half the audience saw only his back, and they booed him.
Seen in 30 years, mate, a shocker.
You spend like $180 and you look at his back, disrespectful.
Barry has been struggling with his mobility due to an underlying condition.
He wasn't able to stand up. He was trying. He was struggling, but he was trying, and God bless him for that.
Looking at the medical information, I can see that Barry suffered from a debilitating condition called edema. A painful accumulation of fluid under the skin which causes swelling, often to the lower legs and ankles. This results in aching limbs and stiffness and could easily account for Barry's lack of mobility on stage.
I personally saw that his ankles and feet were very swollen.
But in terms of my investigation into Barry White's death, edema is significant, as it's also associated with hypertension, high blood pressure, which can lead to cardiac arrest. High blood pressure makes the heart work harder to pump blood around the body, and over time it becomes less effective. The arteries can also narrow, raising blood pressures even further. A common cause of hypertension is too much salt and sodium in the diet, which leads to fluid retention. It is also known to be more prevalent in African Americans. But I've discovered that there was something else in the star's life which could have contributed to his high blood pressure, and that was smoking.
In summer 1998, Barry was living in San Diego and working with a writer on his biography.
Barry, I remember when I was working with him, he was smoking about 150 cigarettes, so 10, 15 packs of cigarettes a day. And when I listened to the cassettes, that the interviews that we made, I remember hearing his incredible voice and then all the cellophane being unwrapped all the time from cigarette packs.
That'll be in meetings, you know, with all the heads of the music industry, and I will see Dad smoking a cigarette. As he's putting that one out, he's lighting up another one.
Even when he was on stage, Barry would often have a cigarette in his hand.
He knew he was addicted to cigarettes, and when he would lose his temper, he would curse the tobacco companies for whatever they put in those horrible cigarettes.
Smoking is the main cause of preventable death in the United States, and it can increase the risk of lung and heart disease, leading to cancer or a heart attack. From accounts, it's clear that Barry smoked right up until his death, and 2 years earlier, I can see Barry suffered a near-fatal episode, which should have been the wake-up call he needed.
After his career dip in the 80s, Barry had a serious cash flow problem.
He went through an awful lot of money, but he had enormous overhead and no money, no records.
But thanks to his renaissance in the 90s, Barry grabbed the opportunity to replenish the coffers. And in the summer of 1995, he embarked on his 18-month World Icon Tour. It was the singer's most ambitious yet, 50 concerts covering more than 30 countries.
In the past, he wouldn't work like back-to-back, I call it. He would do like 3 shows a week and then take off.
But Barry was overambitious, and during the tour, he showed the first signs of poor health. On August 11th, just days after he went on the road, Barry almost collapsed.
The last concert that I saw of Barry's, he could barely stand up. He managed to get through it, and then I understand he almost collapsed after he walked off stage.
We knew something was vitally wrong, but, you know, there's a certain way that you have to try to approach him, you know, and say, you know, Dad, are you all right? Yeah, I'm fine, man, just tired, you know, tour at it.
I was around Barry a lot during that time. We would talk a lot, and I could tell he was getting tired a lot.
From reports, Barry refused to see a doctor after this episode, putting his loss of balance and consistent tiredness down to exhaustion. But in my opinion, these could have been the indicators of something more serious.
Barry continued with the tour until October, when he returned to his Las Vegas home for a planned break between concert dates. But on October 30th, he collapsed. This time, he had no choice but to see a doctor. According to reports, Barry had had a minor stroke, and he was hospitalized.
In my opinion, Barry's stroke was a TIA, a transient ischemic attack, which is different to a normal stroke. In both conditions, the presenting symptoms are similar, caused by a blockage in damaged or narrowed blood vessels. But with a TIA, the blockage is temporary. It appears Barry White had all the associated risk factors for this. Smoking, obesity, and high blood pressure, which would also have damaged his coronary arteries. A TIA is often a warning sign that unless something is done to prevent it, a true stroke might happen in the future, which could lead to paralysis or even death.
And the attack didn't come out of nothing. He was living a life that was, you know, scheduled for an attack. He had a few dizzy spells. He had some shortness of breath. So there were signs.
It also appears that Barry slipped into a stroke-induced coma. This can occur when there is an interruption to the blood flow, which reduces the level of oxygen to the brain.
Barry regained consciousness after 4 days, and within a week he was discharged from the hospital. And on the advice of the medical team, his sister Sandra agreed to help her brother reduce his blood pressure.
I cleaned out the pantry. I took out potato chips, cookies. I had to take them out because he couldn't have them at all. I was asked to prepare his food for him, which I did for 5 years. He did not want a cook or anybody else in the house at the time. I had to weigh his food. I couldn't even prepare the food in his house. I had to prepare it in mine and have someone pick it up and take it to him because he couldn't have extra.
When Auntie Sandra was around with Dad, she was following the guidelines and he was too. And when she wasn't around, I think Dad was kind of dipping and dabbing. He was sliding and cheating.
He'd enjoyed food. It had been good to him. He enjoyed this lifestyle. He didn't indulge in sort of, serious alcoholism or drug taking or anything like that. So it was his one vice. So food became the thing that gave him pleasure.
His reluctance to change his diet and therefore lower his blood pressure spelled disaster for Barry's health, placing huge pressure on an already weakened heart.
And Dr. Hunter has discovered that Barry's love of food may have been the cause of another life-threatening condition.
Have you ever heard that story that Napoleon used the Egyptian Sphinx for target practice and shot its nose off? Or maybe you've heard that a French astrologer named Nostradamus correctly predicted nearly 500 years of human history. Or maybe someone told you that the legendary blues guitarist Robert Johnson sold his soul to the devil at a crossroads in Mississippi. These stories are what I like to call historical myths. Great little tales that may or may not have any basis in historical fact. On Our Fake History, we explore these historical myths and try to determine what's fact, what's fiction, and what is such a good story, it simply must be told. If you dig stories about death-obsessed emperors, lost civilizations, desperate sieges, voodoo, black magic, and famous historical figures you thought you knew, then Our Fake History might just be your new favorite podcast. Still not sure? Then stick around to the end of the episode today to hear a teaser episode of Our Fake History. If you dig it, then subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On July 4th, 2003, soul music legend Barry White died at just 58 years of age due to a cardiac arrest. His life compromised by the effects of being chronically overweight. World-renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter is now examining the evidence leading up to the star's death.
Barry White was obese for most of his life. He was also a chain smoker, and these are commonly associated with hypertension, which can lead to heart disease. Looking at footage of the singer's concerts, I believe there may be another contributing factor to his death.
During his performances, Barry White sweated profusely.
Barry always mopped his brow and always carried a handkerchief.
He would always wipe his face. Women love to see it, so that was his trademark with that scar. If it did have anything to do with his health, he was hush-hush about it.
Obesity coupled with excessive sweating can be a sign of a chronic and serious health condition, type 2 diabetes. Diabetes occurs when the cells are resistant to the hormone insulin. Insulin is produced by the pancreas, and the hormone is often described as a key which unlocks the cells to allow sugar to enter and be used for energy. When this process breaks down, it results in high concentrations of sugar in the blood. Unlike type 1 diabetes, which may be due to genetics, type 2 is manageable or reversible and usually caused by eating fatty foods, lack of exercise, or alcohol abuse. Type 2 is the seventh biggest killer in the United States, and as with hypertension, it is more common in African Americans. Although there is no record to confirm the singer had diabetes, I have found further evidence to corroborate my theory that he did have the condition.
In 1998, Barry White was working with the writer Mark Elliott on his biography. Apart from eating large amounts of fried chicken, the singer was also drinking large quantities of water.
He used to come out, made these crates of bottled water, it's good for it, and we would drink water all day.
Barry didn't drink alcohol, but he loved his water. He really did love his water.
For a chain-smoking lover of calorie-rich foods, extolling the virtues of water was out of character for the star.
That's what really kind of had me kind of confused, because Dad would, you know, he would always stress, drink water. It keeps your kidneys flush, keeps your body flush.
Drinking an excessive amount of water indicates that Barry was dehydrated, and dehydration is a classic symptom of diabetes. If there is a high level of sugar in the blood, the kidneys need to produce more urine to expel it from the body, and this increases the desire to drink to make up for any lost fluid. As with hypertension, Barry could have been suffering from diabetes for decades. With these life-threatening conditions, alongside his weight and smoking, Barry would have been a ticking time bomb.
In the 1990s, Barry's health was becoming such an issue, it was affecting his record deals.
Certain deals falling through, certain labels that didn't want to take him on, not because he wasn't a talented man, because of his health.
Finally, in 1999, Barry struck a one-album deal with a private music label, and his album, Staying Power, won him 2 Grammys. On the back of this, the singer decided to go on yet another punishing world concert tour.
We had Earth, Wind, and Fire with us and moved to one hotel to another as we were going across Europe.
It's hard to tell him anything, especially when it came to his music. Don't get in the way of that.
But another unrelenting schedule took its toll once more.
I think his blood pressure, as I recall, just went through the roof. He was barely able to walk unassisted. Barry just couldn't go on, so Earth, Wind, and Fire went on and finished the rest of the dates.
It appears that Barry White put his career before his health. And I can see that in the year before his death, he was starting to face the consequences of this.
September 2002, Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, Los Angeles, 10 months before Barry White's death. He's admitted to the hospital and told he has kidney failure.
I knew in my heart of hearts, as his son, he knew about his ailment. Any human would know if your kidneys are hurting because you can feel it. Barry didn't want people around him with these pity parties and all. Barry, he didn't like all of that.
The damage to Barry's kidneys is so severe that he needs regular dialysis.
Dialysis is a procedure to remove waste products and excess fluid from the blood when the kidneys stop working properly or when they completely fail. It involves diverting the blood to a machine to be cleaned before it is returned to the body. Dialysis can only partially compensate for lost kidney function, and in serious cases of kidney failure, a transplant is needed. And I can see this was the case for Barry.
Friday, November 1st, 2002. Doctors are already making efforts to find a suitable kidney donor from Barry's family.
I was being tested, you know, and counseled and talked to and everything. The doctors informed me that Barry had to build up his body before he could receive it.
But doctors cannot guarantee whether Barry will be strong enough for a transplant.
A kidney transplant is a major operation, lasting between 2 to 3 hours. With Barry's seriously compromised health, surgery would have been extremely risky.
They tried to regulate his blood pressure, but, you know, it's like trying to patch up a leak with bubblegum.
I was being told it was like giving a dead man a kidney. That's just how it was put to me. That's how bad it was.
With Barry and his family desperately holding on to the hope of a transplant, Dr. Hunter has discovered that the seriously ill singer fell victim to another and especially heartbreaking attack on his body. World-renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter is examining the medical evidence surrounding the death of Grammy Award-winning soul legend Barry White, who died at just 58 years of age.
Barry White was seriously overweight for most of his life. He was probably diabetic and had suffered with hypertension for years. His compulsive eating, heavy smoking, and limited mobility also compromised his health, and all would have contributed to his kidney failure.
May 1st, 2003, Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, Los Angeles, 2 months before Barry White's death. The star has been intermittently in the hospital for 7 months. He's on regular rounds of dialysis, and due to his poor health, a potential kidney transplant has been ruled out.
With Barry's health on a knife edge, the doctors would have been left with no option but to rule him out for a transplant. But without it, his life expectancy would have been cut dramatically. And I can see in the months before his death, his health continued to slide rapidly.
On May 1st, 2003, I mean, the bells tolled. He had a stroke, not surprisingly, because all that high blood pressure.
You know, your body can only go so far. It can only take so much.
Barry's stroke is major. It not only paralyzes the right side of his body, it also takes away something very precious to him.
The irony of all of it is that he lost his voice.
the voice for him was more than just something to speak, to use, to communicate. It was the center of his world.
On top of a stroke and kidney failure, it's difficult to see Barry White coming back to any sort of reasonable health. But in fact, I can see from reports that there were signs that his health may have been improving.
May 2003, Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, 2 months before the star's death. His sons Barry Jr. and Daryl are visiting the singer following his stroke. And they come up with a plan. By playing their father's own music to him, they hope it may help with his recovery.
And you can see he was really perking up. He was slowly starting to move around. It's almost like his health is right here when he started hearing all of his hits.
June 2003, 6 weeks before Barry White's death. He's been showing small signs of improvement since his stroke and has been moved to a rehabilitation center.
He was in rehab to try to learn how to speak again. He was doing good, somewhat.
But about a month into his stay, Barry is rushed back to the hospital, and he begins to have seizures.
After a stroke, there's an increased risk of seizures because the brain has been injured. The injury causes scar tissue to form, causing a surge of electrochemical impulses in the brain. But although symptoms are similar to a stroke, the effects of a seizure are temporary.
But Barry's family members have their own idea about what's been causing his condition to deteriorate.
It was a lot of arguments and disagreements on who would sign papers for Barry. It was a lot of drama.
The fighting is between the family and his then-girlfriend of 9 years, Catherine Denton. They are arguing over who makes the decisions when it comes to Barry's health care.
It was very stressful for Barry. He loved everybody, wanted everybody happy, and all the controversy, it really broke his heart.
A representative from the singer's business management company has arrived from New York. Barry had signed over power of attorney to the company some years ago, giving them control over his affairs. And they make the decision to follow Barry's girlfriend's wishes, effectively shutting the rest of the family out.
Shahar and Barry Jr. were told they can't go in to see their father-in-law.
We were all excluded from being around him by people who shouldn't have been granted that power, but were.
The commotions that was going on outside of his room. He was paralyzed from his stroke, but he could still hear everything.
Stress can be very damaging following a stroke. It can cause an increase in heart rate, elevate the levels of stress hormones, and cause a leap in blood pressure, which is a risk factor for another stroke or even a heart attack. And I can see that quite soon after the seizures began, Barry suffered a severe cardiac event.
June 28, 2003, 1 week before the star's death. Barry's health has slumped even further, and his seizures are becoming more frequent. Suddenly, his heart stops beating. The doctor calls a code blue.
Got a code blue, room 114.
Code blue is called when a patient requires resuscitation or is in need of immediate medical attention. It's most often the result of a respiratory or cardiac arrest. Barry White's condition would have been critical. It's clear his body was giving up.
I know Dad gave up. He didn't want to fight no more. He didn't want to fight no more.
July 4th, 2003, Cedars-Sinai Medical Center. At 10:40 a.m., Barry White dies from cardiac arrest. No family members are present.
Known by his remarkable deep voice, Barry White, the 58-year-old R&B singer, died today. He had been suffering kidney failure and had been hospitalized for a very long time.
The world lost Barry White. We lost a parent. We lost Dad. I mentally and I physically, I emotionally, I lost it.
I thought I had enough time to get there, and just as I got off the plane, no one said anything. I just felt it. I just knew it.
I found out about Barry's demise when I was called at home by the press. I felt really wounded and that I had lost a very dear friend.
After kidney failure, a major stroke, and ultimately a heart attack, Barry White's body could take no more. But what's remarkable to me is that the illnesses that led up to Barry's death are all manageable if kept in check. So what caused him to die from them at just 58 years of age?
And Dr. Hunter believes it goes back to his early life in South Los Angeles. The legendary guru of love, soul singer Barry White, died on July 4th, 2003, at 58 years of age from cardiac arrest. Expert forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter has been examining the star's medical history to find out what contributed to his death.
When he died, Barry White weighed 364 pounds, which severely compromised his health. He didn't do regular exercise, and his weight would have put a huge strain on his heart. I believe he had diabetes due to years of eating large quantities of fatty foods, and he also suffered from hypertension, which was likely exacerbated by his prolific smoking. But all of these conditions are treatable, and the right medication would have undoubtedly prolonged his life. But I can see that 2 years before his death, he was already preparing for the end.
On November 23rd, 2001, Barry was celebrating Thanksgiving at home with his family. During the evening, Barry had a quiet moment with his son, Daryl.
We were sitting outside in the backyard. He was smoking a cigarette, I was smoking a cigarette, and he said, "It's almost time for your daddy to go. Daddy hasn't been taking care of his health." I looked at him and I said, "You know, what the hell are you talking about, Dad?" He said, "I'm going to go into too much detail, but your daddy's not going to be here much longer."
What we see is a pattern of behavior where when things arise, he ignores them. So I think we have one of those glimpses of vulnerability and openness in a way that we hadn't seen before.
But the question is, why did Barry White continue to ignore what his failing body was trying to tell him? Having looked at every aspect of the singer's life, I believe there is one final and very crucial reason for what led to this star's death.
Didn't like hospitals, didn't like doctors, didn't like the police. You know, he didn't trust them.
Barry's distrust of medical professionals stemmed from his poor upbringing.
Barry was unfamiliar with doctors growing up. I don't think the family could afford a doctor. There wasn't a lot of medical care in his life, so I think he just mistrusted, didn't like anything to do with them.
In ghetto life, you take care of yourself. That's a sign of survival. You didn't go to the hospital. If you went to the hospital, you'd be arrested.
And it appears that this mentality resulted in Barry taking huge risks with his health later in life.
My father, he's a trooper, but at times he was also hard-headed. All those high blood pressure pills that they gave him, he wasn't taking them.
Barry was about as stubborn a man as I have ever known, with just a couple of little tablets. He'd probably be alive today.
His medication was music in the studio, you know, and then behind that microphone, singing, arranging, composing, producing, writing. That was his medication.
It is clear that Barry's distrust of doctors and his stubbornness resulted in him ignoring crucial advice that would have prolonged his life. Barry also put his music first. Despite ongoing hypertension, failing kidneys, and surviving a stroke-induced coma, he always got back on the road. But Barry White was living his life on his terms, doing the things that made him happy. Although his life was cut tragically short at just 58 years of age, it appears that Barry was determined that his death would be on his terms as well.
His music is kind of timeless, and his other great legacy is that he increased the population of young married people's offspring tenfold, because all those people put Barry White records on and had babies.
He shared his life with us and with me more than I could ever, you know, dream. And I think his legacy was love.
My father, Mr. Barry White, would want to be remembered as somebody who loved God, loved his mother, loved his children, loved his fans, loved his work.
He had a big open heart. He had a real serious side. But when he laughed, the room shook and everybody laughed.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Autopsy. Don't forget to subscribe at podcastone.com with the Podcast One app or at Apple Podcasts. Then go to reels.com, that's reelz.com, for clips, extras, and more from the TV version of the series, including reenactments and autopsy photos you'll only see on Reels channel. Find Reels on your TV at reels.com. I'm Dr. Michael Hunter.